First on the agenda is the election of officers. Since it's our first meeting of the year,
Didn't turn your mic off. I'm gonna turn mine off. So you made a motion. We have the same
slate as last.
Same slate of officers last year. That would be me as chair and Dr. Pack as vice chair.
I'll second.
Got a motion and a second. Anything further? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Congratulations. Oh wait. consent agenda. All items on the consent agenda will be enacted by one motion. There will be no separate discussion on these items unless a request.
So moved.
Yep, you set up over here on the desk, Brian, if you would. We've got a motion, a motion for the consent agenda. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Got a motion and a second. We'll do a roll call. Spec?
Here.
Dvorak?
Here.
Kluge?
Here.
Passion?
Here.
Toot, aye. The consent agenda passes. Brian, if you want to set it up on this desk. Okay, that's good. Public forum. This is the time for members of the public to offer comments concerning matters not scheduled to be heard before the Board of Health. Is there anybody that wants to bring anything before the board this afternoon? Thank you. Agency and departmental reports. Mid-Iowa Community Action Health Services. Nicole. You'll do just fine.
Good afternoon, I'm
is your green light on?
Yes, it is.
Okay, very good.
Oh, now it's on.
Now it's on.
There we go. Looks green to me. All right. And in this handout, it looks like this. It explains what our child health and maternal health services are, and the number of people that we served in Story County. And quickly, we served over 2,000 children in Story County for our child health program, and that's doing lead draws and dental services. And as part of our EPSDT services, we served over 7,000, and that's ages 0 through 21. And in our maternal health program, we served 333 women. That number always seems really small to me when you compare it to the 7,000 children, but we have a fairly strong maternal health program, one of the strongest in the state. So we feel very good about that. I also provided to you the WIC participation numbers, and that is for fiscal year 2013. And as you can see in Story County, for women, we served a total of 860 women, and infants, 748, children, 928, for a total of 2,385. And obviously, these are unduplicated numbers. I'm going to turn it over to Amy, who will talk to you about First Five.
Hi, I'm Amy Roback. I'm the First Five site coordinator. I gave you guys a brochure about our program, and I'll kind of sum it up. Dr. Passion is pretty familiar with it, so I don't have to go into too many details with him. But what it is we partner with physicians and clinics when they see children during their wild child checkups. And then there's a list of, that purple sheet has a list of referral reasons. So when they meet with the family, if there's any concerns they may have with development, finances, family stress, depression. I mean, there's a whole list there. They can send a referral to First Five, and we follow up with the family. It can be on a month-to-month basis. It can be just a few weeks, depending on how many needs that family has and how long it takes before they feel like they're comfortable and where they need to be. And then the final link is we follow up with the physician who sent the referral. So we'll send a follow-up back to let them know who they're working with, what type of services they're receiving. That way everyone's on the same page, and everyone knows who's working with who and where they're at. And then I also gave you another sheet that says what our first five providers are saying. And these are the most recent quotes from the staff at the clinics that we serve and how they feel about the program and how it's working for them. So for numbers, we are currently working with 17 practices. We cover Story, Boone, Hardin, Tama, and Marshall County. So those 17 practices are in those counties. And from July 1st through December 15th of this year, or this past year, we've received 87 referrals. Most of those referrals come from developmental concerns or hearing and speech concerns. A lot of them also tend to roll into family stress as well. And then we also have made 151 referrals from those referrals to other agencies.
So basically they're just a clearinghouse for us. And let me tell you, I just want to say we so appreciate your services because, you know, instead of having us to piecemeal it, one call, First Five, and they see what our concerns are, and they decide, or they help get them to the right people, and then we get follow-up from them. And just from their notes, they really make a strong effort to try to contact these families and get them into where they need to go. So it's really nice, and you know, and I can't say enough good about Micah. So, okay.
Okay, I also left with you, we have a short-term grant that is up March 31st, and you'll guess why as soon as you hear about it. It's to help people learn about healthcare.gov and signing up for insurance so that we make sure that we are getting information out to the people in our community so nobody is left that needs to sign up. And so we have someone that's available to give presentations. We will give them to whoever would like them. It can be an organization. We've met with several human service agencies and have given presentations to their staff, but we've also done churches and just interested people. We've done them at libraries. And you know, if you have 8 to 10, 15, 20 people that can get together and want to know more of how do you get signed up and what are the implications. Now, this is with the insurance division, and we are limited in what we can present. So, you know, if you think you're going to get your individual family situation solved at this meeting, that's not going to happen. You would need to either call your navigator or a certified application counselor, or your insurance broker. But here, it gives you a nice, broad picture of what healthcare.gov can do and what some of the things that might apply to your family. So if you have people that are interested, we're trying to get, in the month of February, 28 presentations. We have 11 scheduled, so we have space. If we go for 28, that'd be wonderful. So if you have any questions, please call, and we will arrange a time. We can do weekends, evenings, whatever you would like.
Are you like, I think you should be. Are you hanging out in the free clinic?
We have past information now, and we have, you know, and Micah does the dental clinic. And so we're passing out information at all of our services and connecting with community programs as well.
I think that would be a real good thing to kind of try to get set up at least a presence in the free clinic, because, I mean, that's the group that, you know, are coming there because they don't have insurance. This is the whole idea of health, you know, of the whole Affordable Health Care Act.
Right. There are, I think there are pockets of populations that need to be reached, that, and, you know, if you look at Story County, there are those non-traditional students that are no longer eligible to be carried on their parents' insurance, you know, providing information, and some of them may have chosen up until this point not to be insured. So there's lots of pockets of people. The free clinic is absolutely one.
Coordinate with the university to maybe set up presentations?
I've been, well, I'll tell you, some of these initiatives are quick. We just got this grant maybe January 6th. Okay, so we're making those contacts. In January, we did 11 presentations. February, we're trying to do 28. We have 11 set up. I've contacted some people at the university, but if you know of anybody, we'd be glad to contact them. You know, my thought is to go through student services, but that's not always the place either. So I've also contacted their child welfare project.
I have a question for you. You said you served about 2,000 children there, between birth to 22. Can you give me a little... Where did most of those fall?
Excuse me?
Of the 2,000, what age group are most of them in?
The 2,000, most of those are 0 to 5. Our child health clinics are in conjunction with our WIC. So we see they come to the WIC clinic, and as well the child health clinic or the maternal health clinic,
okay,
at the same time. The 7,000 are those people that we reach that are newly on Medicaid, and try to make sure they have a dental home, a medical home, that they understand their benefits, and are there any other services that they need.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, Youth and Shelter Services. Denise? I've seen a lot of you lately.
Possibly more.
Not that that's a bad thing.
Yeah. Okay, I get that a lot. Well, I will be brief then. You have before you a report that we sent, which is our quarterly report. It's the same thing that we sent to the Board of Supervisors. It just reports out on how many young people we're seeing and how many presentations we're doing in the community. It looks at sort of four overarching goals that speak to binge drinking and other drugs of abuse, and how we do that in the schools and in the community. And so it really goes through all the different strategies that we use for prevention, information, education, the alternative kinds of groups that we do with different school groups, the Mayor's Youth Committee, Game Changers at Ballard, those kinds of things. And so you have a report on that. The other thing that I wanted to highlight is I've given you some other information that we are trying to get out to address a couple of different issues, and one of them is the marijuana for medical purposes is rearing its head again, and so everybody has an opinion. I hear very few facts. So what I've tried to do is we've put together a facts handout that we're giving people and making sure that some of those issues are clear. And the other thing that I gave you is something that the Monitoring the Future folks do every year. Monitoring the Future is a survey that is done with high school students every year through the University of Michigan, and it's funded by the National Institute of Drug Abuse. And they look at multiple things. They look at what young people are saying that they actually use in a lot of different drugs. And I just happen to pull the one for marijuana. But what they look at is four things. They look at availability. They look at perception of harm, perception of disapproval, and availability, use, perception of harm, and perception of disapproval. And what they see every time, and what you can see in those charts, is that when perception of harm goes down, use goes up. When perception of disapproval goes down, use goes up. In other words, if you think that your friends and your parents are not going to approve of it, and you genuinely think that it could do you some harm, people tend to back away, despite whether it is available or not. And as you can see from that chart, availability stays relatively the same. But you can see that in those years when there was high perception of harm, use went down dramatically. There was a, you know, of an A then B, exactly. But in the last 11 years, the perception of harm has gone down as more and more states have, as it were, legalized marijuana for medicinal purposes. Because when you use the metaphor of medicine, people perceive that that means that there is no harm. So what we are, so you are always looking at how you can increase the perception of harm, and that's what we do when we go out and we give talks that are informational, or we're doing educational kinds of things in the classroom, is look at what are the facts, not just somebody's opinion, not their own personal perception of that. And then, of course, the other kinds of strategies that we like to pair that with are access. Prevention is all about trying to increase the age of onset, trying to make it less likely that young people use it, because the younger they use it, the more likely they are to find themselves in an addiction situation. And then if people do use, to mitigate harm. So one of the ways that with young people in particular is you try and raise the perception of harm, which is not always easy because nobody ever thinks it's going to happen to them, but also to reduce access. And anything that is legal has higher access. So those are the, you know, that's the dichotomy that we're always up against. But I wanted you to see how that plays out, or how that has played out. I think that that chart is from the 70s to just last year. Where does it start? 75. So you can see the progression of how use has changed and how the perception has changed. But that is always, when we're doing any of the programming that you see in the quarterly report, that is always the goal, to increase the perception of harm and the perception of disapproval so that that actually use goes down. And in the meantime, of course, do other environmental strategies where you reduce the access in the first place, using those two together to make sure they can't get it in their hands to begin with. Which, of course, brings us to the nicotine ordinance, which I think we're going to discuss later. But just so you know, the Prevention Policy Board met yesterday, and Steve Holmes came and spoke with them, and they have decided that they want to continue with that. They're going to work on language that strengthens that ordinance, so that when it comes back to the Board of Supervisors, we'll have something that we think is a more clear ordinance. The concern was that maybe some of the verbiage was not as clear. And, of course, now it has gone to the legislature, which always makes everything more interesting. So we'll see.
I think, too, with the marijuana that's out now is much stronger. And because of it being so much stronger, it's leading on to other stronger drugs, of heroin and those type of things. So to me, it's a real concern. Because
it's a different drug than it was 30 years ago.
Yeah, it's much stronger. And you know, there's been a lot in the news about this heroin going around now, and I think it just leads to bad.
It's slippery slope.
Yeah.
Is there a real push to get it legalized here now? I mean, I know there's been some talk in the past.
I couldn't tell you. I don't know that a bill has been introduced. I know that, and I can't quote you which legislator it was, said that he would introduce it. But the person who is the head of that committee has also said that it won't ever get out of committee, Clell Bowler. So, and the governor has said that he won't sign it. So I take hope from that. Yeah. It's actually not a very good drug, even for pain. On an 11-point scale, it moves the needle about 0.5. At about 4% THC, it actually does help pain somewhat, but at 8% THC, it makes pain worse in double-blind studies. So, but you don't care. It's not unlike morphine that way. You're still in pain, but you don't care. And it works so quickly when it is smoked. But medical marijuana is available in pill form. It has been since 1985. But it doesn't happen immediately because it's a pill, so people don't think it works the same. Anyway, I could go on and on about that. Don't get me started. Any questions?
No. Thank you very much. Next is Homeward, Eileen Mullen.
We have a short report. I think the budget first is what I'll speak to. You have that in front of you. It's this form here.
Okay.
We're halfway through the year, and you'll see that we've spent 59% of our grant dollars have been spent. There really isn't any new ahas here as far as how we're spending it or any client problems. Can see that disease outbreak, 78% has been spent on that. Skilled nursing and health promotion has been 57%. And Terry's going to give her report, then I will just wait and update on the lead prior to a lead discussion, and then the new fiscal year application for the local public health service grant. I'll speak to that.
Okay. I'm Terry Olinger, public health nurse for Story County, and flu update. Activity was upgraded from regional to widespread because children returned to school. And so H1N1's the prevalent strain right now, and that hits mainly, younger people. So it is still considered widespread, and the activity in the U.S. is still remaining high. Other diseases, pretty typical, except for we did have one case of HIB, a newborn baby contracted from birth mother. So that really was the unusual case for November, December. So Haemophilus B influenza is HIB. All right, as far as emergency preparedness, we just finished our mid-year progress report. We are focusing on two capabilities, Capability 1 and Capability 15. Those are coalition development and volunteer training. We have been doing a lot of volunteer training for our point-of-dispensing clinics, five since August. And our children's immunization clinics have been very busy. Our senior health clinics have been very busy as well. So a lot of demand there. That is my report.
You know, I might add one thing. You'd mentioned the free clinic, which made me think of the community health center, the new one. We have been in discussion about having our immunization clinics there in the future, and so we'll be more available to all people that come in there. So I'll keep you updated on that.
Any questions?
Okay.
Oh, wait a minute.
What are we charging for flu vaccine?
There was a letter to the editor in the Des Moines paper last week, and I don't want us to get into one of those discussions. I know we have to charge it. We have to charge to cover costs.
Well, we're much better than that. I saw that letter, too.
You saw that letter, too, and I just don't want us to wind up in that situation.
It was at a clinic, right? The one at the clinic where they were. The flu shot was reasonable. I can't remember.
The flu shot was reasonable.
But then 70-some dollars or something for them.
Yeah, the cost that they charged for.
So
at $20, right now it's $20. Usually we'll start out at $40, and then to get people who wait till the last minute, we try to get it all out there, and one way is to reduce the price. So we did bring it down to $20. I think that was the 1st of January, or mid-December, first of January. So,
and we benchmark with the local pharmacies. We do not charge for our charge for our personnel. It's just flat out for the
flat out
vaccine.
Yeah. Starts at $30. We do have missed. We charge $40 for that. Then we had flu block, which I think we gave one dose. That was $40. And our high dose was more. It was $45. So, all right.
Does it seem reasonable?
I don't know. I go to Walgreens.
Good to me. Yeah.
Sounds good, huh? Yeah.
What do you still have left? A lot?
a fair amount. We used to administer thousands you know, a vaccine, because we were the only provider in town, really, at one time. But now there, everyone is a provider, basically, a lot of medical facilities, pharmacies. So there's not a need, and we focus on needs. We do keep it in stock and try to keep a lot of options available to people, but I think we ordered 200 doses of the injectable vaccine. We still have probably 75 doses of that. High dose, we ordered about 150. I think we have about 35 doses left. That's our big seller. We get a lot of high dose clients that come in. So
we're still open for business.
Yes, in the moment.
If it's on a need, I suppose we should keep as low as possible to get...
We're a public health department, right, so we don't want to, you know, charge a high price. But we base the amount, I should correct myself, we base the need on how much we order, because the last couple of years we have not administered that many, and the need is met out in the community at the other medical facilities, so we focus on what we feel that the need is, and that's where we focus our amounts.
Once we get our billing abilities, what are you going to ask about that? Then we can open it up and maybe, you know, try to do a little revenue from the commercials.
Right.
But you know, it's really very interesting, though. Our public health department does not serve the same role as other public health departments in other counties. I mean,
right,
there are certain counties where still the providers just send everyone to the public health department to get their shots. They don't want to keep the vaccines. They're money losers, and they tell people to just go to their public health department to get their vaccine. But we don't do that in this county. So it's their role is, that's not a primary role for them. We talk about it because we've got numbers and stuff. But I've never felt that their immunization clinics have been a primary role for them. Their primary role is many other things.
And I suppose as we start seeing how healthcare keeps evolving and going, if there's physicians, providers prefer to move it out to someplace else, who knows? I don't know. We'll be set up to be able to do that. I guess that's what we're trying to position ourselves, so that if that's ever the way, I don't know what's going to roll out.
Public health seems to just be very cyclic. And at one time, when I first started giving vaccine, we had probably 20 clinics within the county, and we gave thousands of doses. But then the role of public health changed, and that went, you know, the vaccines went back to the doctor's offices. So kind of a pendulum thing. Just depends, but... Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Get them.
Okay, thank you.
You got to get them.
Yeah, we give a lot of flu vaccines when kids come in for ill business.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, what better time? I mean, you got them. You can get them a shot.
See, Margaret's moving to the microphone.
I am.
Got something to say?
Oh, is it not my turn?
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay.
Just keep you on your toes.
Okay, so this slide is from Kristen. She found this one. I thought it was cute. Can you see Friday yet? Oh, cute. Okay. What's going on with that? That looks so...
You can actually put that screen up.
Oh, that's what's wrong.
Yeah, they've got it set, so it just...
Yep. That's better. Okay, I'll start off with septic numbers like I usually do. One thing that I added to this table is the number of new house permits as per planning and development records compared to new septic permits. And I've compared the last 4 years just to see where we're at. And you can see the recession definitely affects housing starts and new septic systems going in. 2013 was a pretty good, very good year for septic permits that were handed out. New houses, you know, it's odd that there was only 47 starts, but yet 70 new septic permits. So, some of them are the man caves, the Morton buildings with the bathroom. Those have to have a septic permit. And, people have a lot of money that they're not sure what to do with. So that's what they do with it, I've been finding. And then the rest then, of course, would be retrofitted systems that require the whole thing to be replaced. Boone County's numbers are a little higher because they've been behind on their time of transfer inspections. We've been doing it for a long time. They've just been doing it since 2009, so they have a little bit higher numbers. And then, as Dr. Kluge well knows, there's been some frozen systems that we've been getting calls on. Technically only three or four official calls, but then a lot of grumbling from the guys that work on this. It's just a really tough year with no snow cover, super cold temperature conditions, and very dry soil. All three of those make the perfect storm for bad substitutes. So, you know, what this means is that maybe we need to be insulating these systems when they're put in initially. Maybe this is global warming and we're going to keep seeing some oddball winters on and off, and it's time to maybe address that problem. So we'll see what technology comes up with next on
so,
that.
So what would you do with a for a frozen system?
If you call the Roto-Rooter guy, or, well, whoever, some router-type person, and they open up the box, they open up the tank, and there's a lot of different things that could be causing those problems. So they just troubleshoot till they find what they think is wrong and fix it. Yeah. Pitch of the pipe, roots, haven't pumped in a long time, too much clean water getting to the tanks. So if you have a running toilet, things like that, you know, they, a lot of it is just maintenance. For enforcement, we have 9 outstanding notice of violations, and the 3 have recently, just this past week, called to get a plan in place for compliance. So just out of the blue, 3 calls. And we have 10 outstanding binding agreements. Those are from time of transfers where they postpone something that they need to do. 5 overdue, so we'll be sending out notice of violations for those guys. What we'll basically do is change the deadline so that they can get septic systems installed this spring. Can't do it now, obviously.
If you sell a house, say, this time of year, are you able to inspect the septic system?
Pretty much no. They're doing binding agreements to postpone the inspections as well. Yeah. So for well numbers, let's see, you can see the past 3 years. Pretty constant, I'd say, kind of transfers and that. We have 16,000 remaining in the grant fund. Kathy's been managing the Grants to Counties program, keeping track of plugins, testings, and rehabs. Lead inspection program, still have 8 open cases, but no activity on that. My EBL certification expires this month. $500, 2 days, 1 exam. Wow. Pool, tattoo, and tanning programs. The pools, what I'm interested in doing is inspecting the indoor pools this month and in March. They're not due yet, but I think I don't want those folks to get comfortable and have a planned arrival for us. I want to mix that up a little bit so that they're in compliance all year round, not just for the inspection time. For the tanning, we've administered 2 tanning exams. The folks that operate the systems, the tanning facilities, they'll come to our office and have to sit for an exam. For tattoos, Kathy inspected one new facility. We received a needles complaint, and we plan on inspecting all of those facilities in February, a handful of them.
Just an annual inspection for the tanning.
That's correct, or as needed complaints and things.
Sure.
So how many will that be?
5. All 4 or 5? Yeah. 5. Now, all in Ames.
5 tattoos, huh?
22 indoor pools, by the way.
How many indoor pools?
22.
Really?
Yeah. Well, 3 for ISU and a lot of the sports facilities have them. Hotels, of course.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're around. It's pretty wild.
Do you do, like, at Mary Greeley's, their rehab pool?
Medical, we do not have to. Yeah. complaints, hoarding, odor for two manure deals, and then one abandoned house. And that was like a rodent harborage complaint. Animal confinements, I went with Paul Toot and Rick Sanders on a tour of the Lincoln Feeders. They wanted to show us their new facility going in. The one that we saw did not have any animals in it yet. That was still under construction. Let's see. I went for the manure application certification. I'm not certified. I just sat for the class. And it was interesting to sit with the CAFO owners and get their perspective on things. One thing that they did bring up at that class was the PED virus and the biosecurity. We did buy a bag of, or a box of disposable boots so that we're not part of that biosecurity problem when we enter the farms and that tracking around. The PED virus is very strong. Could last, you know, could infect every pig in the United States from a teaspoonful of this is what they say. And so you have to be really careful not to track that from one farm to another. We don't. If you recommend that, we'd appreciate.
Protocols for PED farms too.
That'd be great. Thank you. Yeah. Let's see. Oh, and then the last thing, the Story County Board of Supervisors adopted a construction evaluation resolution for 2014. This is the master matrix thing, and they have to approve that every year. So this is just kind of standard procedure. Trainings and meetings, we went to, did a bunch of stuff. I won't read them. Iowa, it was probably one of the bigger things. Every year we go to that, and we're in all things septic-y. And really good meetings. We learn a lot. This is Radon National Action Month, and so we all sat and listened to some radon webinars. The county buildings, I'm working with Cal. They've given us the floor plans for all the buildings for Story County, and we're going to be checking radon levels for all buildings. That'll take place probably not for another month or two, and we'll help them decide where the sampling canister should go. Let's see, what else do we do? Radon, Civic Plus, employee, oh yeah, Matt's been really busy with the Employee Action Committee. He's the head of that committee this year for the whole county, and working a lot on that. Christian Renta Leadership Nevada. This slide is super busy. What I did is I just kind of stole some tables and little blips from my proposal for the Hickory Grove Lake WERB application. So, you know, it's on the impaired list for bacteria. So there's 33 houses in the watershed, 23 with permits and about 10 without, and 10 without permits. So the biggest bang for a buck would be going after the ones that do not have permitted systems, and typically those houses are, or the average age is 100 years, so you know their septic system is quite old too. So to replace all nine of those systems would cost around $90,000, and then in our budget, we offered up $18,000 for that. Conservation District is coming up with $10,000, and then I'm asking WERB for $17,000. One of the things that they like to see in these grant proposals is that we are indeed improving water quality, and that's what that final table shows, is that we are, you know, 515 pounds per year of BOD, 44 for phosphorus, 63 for nitrogen. So just by replacing those systems, on average, we could reduce that much stuff going to the lake. Now, the bad news I heard from Earth Cross is that there is competition for that WERB money. Bear Creek, a couple folks out of Roland are applying for some money. And then also the city of Ames is applying for more money for more study at Squaw Creek. And then for the budget, we had the budget workshop in January. It was passed except for the vehicle budget was cut by $400. Office supplies, it was cut by 100, and employee expenses, mileage expenses was cut by $500. And then we've had minimal problems with our vehicle, but we might switch over to another one that's becoming available through emergency management because it has lower mileage. It's got 90 instead of 150, but that's still kind of on the table. And last slide, so for old business, we talked about the site review process. I think I'm just going to put that on the back burner for a while, keep with what we're doing. And then for the septic review of that planning and development applications, I think it would be a good idea to try it for a year and just see, you know, really keep track of what goes on with that and see if it's how many septic systems we come up with, how much complaints we get on it, things like that. I don't know. And I didn't put it on the agenda for a vote, so maybe I will for the next time. I can write up a proposal if you want
to. Explain that a little more.
Okay, it's kind of hard. It's kind of a convoluted thing, but when the planning and development receive applications for putting on a garage or this or that, the only time we review them is if they're adding bedrooms, because then they would have to increase the size of their septic. Lots of them, they don't have septic systems. They're just, you know. So what we want to be able to do is take a look at any application that comes in, whether they're adding a bedroom or not, to see if they have a septic system, and if they don't, then they have to kind of, you know, prove that they do have one. I don't know if that would have to go to a public hearing or what. It might, even for 1 year.
Wouldn't necessarily be an ordinance. It would be a change in policy, but
yeah. I'll run that past Jessica.
We need some guidance from the county attorney's office and see what they suggest. It would be a complete change in what we're doing now. So, in other words, if anybody was going to do anything that required a permit,
from
the planning department would trigger this
review,
application review to see if their septic system was up to date. So, and I don't know. We've discussed it back and forth, and I think there would be I don't even know if you'd say a fair amount of pushback. I think it kind of depends. I mean, if you don't have a septic system and you want to put on an addition, and I think somebody here said it last time, this is what this board is here for. I mean, it's
cleaning up the
get your septic system in order first, and then put your addition.
Yeah. If you got money to put your
right.
Editorial, I guess. The other thing, one other thing, or a couple other things. Let's see. There's a bill introduced that would prevent county folks from participating, from becoming a kind of transfer inspector. Wouldn't affect us, but that's just out there. And then we've also been working with emergency management to review the ESF 11 plan. And that's all I have. Any questions?
Thank you. Welcome. There's no public hearing items. Under additional items, discussion and consideration of the lead grant. And along with that, we will kind of also discuss, it's under item 7, but it's number 8, discussion and consideration of the local public service application. And this is just in order so Eileen can get herself down the road without having to wait. She's got to get back to Des Moines. So at what point do you need to make your call to?
Why don't I give just a really brief
okay. What
we're doing, and then we'll make
a
call.
We're actually going to put a phone call into somebody from the Department of Public Health. They couldn't come up in person, so we're just going to see how that.
They must have had an insight. Yeah, I do. They must have had an insight to the weather. What I'm bringing forward is that we're recommending that that Homeward has been in Story County Board of Health has been the over the grant for the lead program, and we would like to discontinue that. And before I'll tell you a few reasons why, but let me tell you just briefly what the grant responsibilities are. We provide medical case management for home nursing visits, referrals for nutritional counseling if needed, and referral for developmental testing. Environmental case management, Margaret, with the inspections of the lead poisoned children, contract property owners, contract
contacting the property owners to determine the lead hazard. Remediation is completed and follow-up inspections and so forth. Other services is that we are contacting families and healthcare providers as needed when we have a lead case. We provide education and outreach as needed. If Margaret needs certification to inspect, we will the grant. We would like it to cover that, and sending out reminder letters to get their levels drawn to families once it was identified that they were high. Our history here for Story County, year to date for this fiscal year, is zero number of cases. The prior fiscal year was two cases in the county, and prior to that, four cases. So we have a pretty low lead follow-up. Some counties, unfortunately, are much higher. Our reimbursement this year that we're in is $10,479. Next year, it will be $4,457. It can the grant, as we know in a lot of our programs, the dollars are decreasing in the way that they're identifying how much we get. They have new methods of figuring that out, and now it's based on the number of clients we have. And since if we continue so low, we'll pretty much get zippo at some point. Our expenses typically run in a year $7,400 to $8,000. And that's just really a huge majority of that is secretarial and some of Margaret's inspections and a little bit of the nurses and other requirements with the program. So as you can see, we're not going to be able to cover expenses just to maintain the program. And as Terry pointed out, just applying for the grant takes a lot of dollars. So this is our recommendation. And so what I have passed out in front of you is on this is a copy of it says chart of services provided by Iowa Department of Public Health in counties that were not following up ourselves with the lead program. And we are going to be talking now with Kevin Officer, who is he's a community health consultant down at Iowa Department of Public Health. He and I'm not sure who else is going to be on the speakerphone, so it'll give us, he'll probably go through this a little bit of what it would be that the state would take over for us, and it also gives us an opportunity to ask questions.
I think, Margaret, if you could kind of point that microphone down once you make your connection, and then there's a volume switch.
You need it on there? Oh, you don't.
Oh, you do? Oh, you want this on there?
Yeah.
Sorry, I thought it was noise.
Yeah, because then it gets picked up and gets on the record.
Officer here.
Hi, Kevin. This is Margaret Baines with Story County. And we have
you on. Hello, Margaret. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you? Say, we have the Board of Health meeting, quarterly meeting in session right now, and you are on speakerphone as we had planned to discuss the lead grant.
Okay, I appreciate it. And with me here is Carmelie Stone. She is the Environmental Health Services Director, and we may have one other person joining us, but currently it's myself, Kevin Officer, and I am the contract manager for the Childhood Lead Poisoning Prevention Program.
This is Eileen, Kevin, and we've passed out to all the board members the chart of services that you sent over to me, so they have that in front of them. And I don't know if you want to start with that or.
Well, I guess what I would like to do is just kind of get a better feel from the Board of Health and certainly from folks in the program of kind of what their thought process is right now with the program and proceeding ahead with it before I kind of go into the services.
This is Eileen, and as we've talked about just briefly via our emails, is that as our history of the number of lead cases in our county has typically been low over the past 3 years, and year to date it's zero.
and the maintenance of the contract that's doing the routine operational components of it, our quarterly meetings, follow-up with certain secretarial components, our expenses are above what our reimbursement is. And because of our low numbers, and we're making this recommendation to turn this over to the state. And I know that there are some questions possibly from some of the Board of Health members just to feel comfortable that in turning this over that we're being served well when needed.
And we certainly appreciate having this discussion with you guys, you know, as you make this decision. Kind of to maybe back up a little bit and take a look at or look forward at the upcoming contract, one of the primary things as we look forward to the FY15 application process, one of the primary services that that you kind of mentioned, the secretarial administrative type services, one of the primary things that will go away is the entering of the bloodletting.
That will be huge.
With the database, once the new database gets up and running, that service will kind of go away for you guys. So I know that's a big chunk of your time entering those bloodletts.
The data, IDPH will do that. It'll automatically happen now. Instead of
home. Yeah, what will happen once the database goes to more of an online version is that we're currently working with the labs to send us that data and have it automatically entered into the format that we need it in. So it will no longer be a manual entry, but will be data that will be downloaded directly into the health database.
When that occurs, and I do recognize that will happen, when that occurs, can you identify what the role would be of Story County Public Health, and would it simply be that if there is a lead case identified, that the nurse and the environmental case manager will do their normal routine, but then after that there is we don't send out letters anymore, and we don't need to do all those components. Reminder letters.
As far as the contact with the family, I mean, if you were to run the program, operate the program again, those types of follow-up services after an investigation would still occur. You would still be required to make contact with those families based on what those blood lead levels are. Probably the primary thing would just be the entering of that data into the database.
So this is John Pash, and I'm on the Board of Health. I'm a pediatrician, actually. And so what I'd kind of like to know is, right now what happens is if we have an abnormal blood lead level, we contact Homeward. And they go from there. What would we do if we come across a blood lead level of like 12? You know, would we be able to get an investigation going? Would we just have? Because I've had cases where there have been children with blood lead levels of like 20 and 25, and they've been followed actually very closely. And they came down on their own, and they didn't need chelation. They weren't in Story County, but they were in the local Boone County. Would it be the same type of interaction?
John. So what you're referring to is if IDPH took over the program, or if the program remained the same with Story County.
I'm referring to if IDPH takes it over.
Oh, okay. I see. Well, as far as the service, this might be a time to get into that chart of services that I sent you over with, and we can kind of cover that and some other areas. So as you kind of look at that chart of services, And I mean, basically what the chart is saying is that if Story County were to no longer run the program and IDPH came in and ran the program, these are the services that would occur. And kind of as we look at that list, and kind of go through it, I've identified in that right-hand column what the areas that IDPH would cover. And you'll see that is under letter B there, we'd be involved in some of the follow-up, confirming the blood lead levels, and some of the nutrition counseling, which would just be kind of a referring it to the proper agency there in the county, and coming in and doing the EBL inspections for the lead poison kids, and doing the follow-up with the homeowners just to confirm that the hazards are being repaired, and of course managing those cases, and really as far as any education, it wouldn't be really any direct education as far as a program standpoint, but just education on as needed or requested basis from a group within the county, and then just coordinating other efforts with Title V and other child programs within the county. But I guess overall what I would say is that our services would not be as proactive or engaged, and we would be not as responsive as if Story County were running the program. So, for example, making the contact of families right now in the 31 other counties that we cover, we will only make contact with those families if a blood lead level is 20 or above. So we've kind of prioritized our services based on the number of counties that we currently serve. So again, we don't have the resources to make the number of calls at the lower lead levels between a 15 and 19, or even blood levels between 10 and 15. So we just opted to focus on some of those higher priority, higher blood lead level cases.
It answers my question.
I have a question for you regarding the software.
Okay.
For the program, I know our staff has spent countless hours over the years running batches. Now, will that go away with this new computer system? And when, I know we've heard for years we are getting a new system. Do you have any idea when that will be implemented?
Yeah, I mean, you're kind of getting out of my contract level of expertise here, but I think I can provide you with some guidance on this. As far as what will go away as far as the database, the current Stellar database, which is very much older and much cumbersome system, will be replaced by an online system. So there won't be that need to have that software on your local computers and have to download that information and submit it to IDPH. It will be very much live data. So as far as the activities, those Stellar correction hours will go away. The monthly Stellar data uploads and the lab batches will no longer be activities that you'll have to do also, which again is a bigger chunk of that administrative time that you're referring to. As far as we're anticipating that the system will be active by July 1st, when the contracts become open and ready to go.
Is that a pretty firm date? Because we have been told. Yeah.
This is not a No, I know, and this is Carmelie Stone, and the Bureau Chief for Environmental Health Services, and I have Steve Schmitz is also in the room. Due to some reorganization, the Lead Bureau merged with the Environmental Health Services Bureau on January 1st, and so Lead is now underneath another bureau, and we have created a new bureau, and we have some unit lead structures, which is why Stu is in here. Yes, absolutely, July 1st. I know we have said January 1st. I know we said possibly 2 years ago. And so, no, this is our date, and we are doing whatever we can to meet this date. And Stu is on it, and I have every faith that we will meet that July 1st date. So, yes, I know that the department has given you several different dates, but, no, July 1st is our date.
Could that be part of written into the contract?
I know you are.
It's public record now.
Good, it's on the record.
It's in the minute.
If that will get you to sign a contract, then yes, it will be in there.
This is Sue. I'm just recently I've been involved in this effort and working with all the folks that are on the ELP project, and it seems to be moving okay now. As far as I know, we have an active help within our office here, and the recent downloads that have been received up in the county are on there, and that is being cleaned up, and as we move forward, you'll be getting some information on the training on this and the rollout of everything. So in the next month or two, you should be receiving a lot more information on it.
I think this is Paul Tootin. I'm just happen to be the chair of the Board of Health, and I think the concern is that you, with losing the local aspect, and I know the City of Ames went through something similar a few years ago with their inspections on their dining facilities in the city. I know they had great concern about that when the Department of Public Health took that back over, and really, since then, I haven't heard much about it. But I think the concern, at least for me, I'm not going to try to speak for the rest of the board members, but the concern is that we lose that local local touch. That, you know, Margaret, our environmental health director here for the county, does those inspections. Dr. Pash is a pediatrician, knows that all he has to do is pick up the phone and he calls homeward and says, I've got an elevated blood level on one of my patients. And you know, everything kind of falls into place. And you know, no disrespect intended, but you know, I've been in county government long enough to know how things sometimes turn out when the state steps in and takes over a program.
Yeah, and this is Carmelie again, and I'm not going to deny that at all. And Department of Inspections and Appeals is the one that has the restaurant, hotel, motel inspections, not the Department of Public Health. So I can't speak to how well that they have communicated with you or haven't since returning those inspections. But yeah, I absolutely agree, and I think we would agree with you that by you not doing it, you lose that local perspective. And so we would completely understand that. And I think so where we're coming from is that covering 31 counties, and we have less than an FTE that covers those 31 counties, we have to also prioritize, just like the prioritization process that you're going through right now. So, yeah, we definitely do not disagree with your opinion and respect that opinion that you have.
And would it be reasonable to assume, I know Eileen told us that the current grant that we're in is $10,000, give or take, and next year's looks to be $4,000. Is this trend continuing? I mean, at some point here, within the next couple of years, was this grant opportunity going to be? Is it going to go away altogether?
Yeah, actually, if you, I know where that 4,000 number is coming from, and that's the number that we have listed in that current application. But that number is based on if all 99 counties apply for those dollars, and that has never happened. Basically, if you take a look at your current budget. Looks like just south of $10,500. Basically, through some negotiations and some discussions with our local programs, they agreed to take approximately about a 20% reduction in that current fiscal year contract. So actually what it'll be probably around $8,000 to $9,000 that'll be available for Story County in fiscal year 15.
Anybody have any other questions for these fine folks?
We are certain. Well, you can negotiate the activities. I don't know that the dollars will be negotiated, Eileen. Other than negotiating where those dollars can be spent at. I mean, I think we're certainly open to taking a look at the dollars that we will have presented to you under the contract. And work with you on how you feel is the best way to spend those dollars.
And then maybe even putting in something, about the computer system. But yeah, I think negotiating if we do go that route
on what we spend our money on, definitely.
Okay. I'm certainly open to that. And I know that Carmely and Ken has expressed, their desire to work closer with the counties. Because really, everyone's in a real transition right now. So we're certainly open, and we spent a lot of time last year in engaging the local programs to get some feedback on how best to transition this program as we move forward. So certainly, what I would recommend, is regardless of what Story County's decision is on the program, is at a minimum to at least move forward in completing the application to become an approved program. So without that first initial step, then you'll really lose the opportunity to negotiate anything down the line after July.
Hey, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Okay.
I think that's good. Thank you.
Okay.
You bet. Have a good day.
Thank you.
The final word. So what I'm hearing, see if I heard this right, that they would basically do what you do, but not as quickly, maybe, and maybe at a higher level of lead. Yeah.
Provided, it looks like they would not provide a nurse to make a visit.
Oh, that
The home nursing visit they would not provide, and there was one other thing I noticed.
Yeah.
The coalition.
Not run Story County Lit Coalition is what they wouldn't do. So I know those two things would not be part of the contract.
And it looks like the EDL will not be performed as quickly, but I thought there were deadlines that you had to do those by.
There are deadlines.
There are kindergarten.
They would have to follow that.
Kindergarten entry and school nurses follow up with those.
Oh.
They're required.
No,
On C, Terry, the drawing where there's numbers and EDL case.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when they have to get in and do the inspection, there is mm-hmm.
a requirement.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they'd have to meet the minimum of that, if mm-hmm. nothing else.
Well, my concern is the fact currently there's 31 counties and got less than a full-time employee.
Yeah, forget it.
No. Right.
There's some higher than ours, right? I don't know. I couldn't give you the stats. But.
On the 20 being high, I mean, perspective of, is it super high? Is it, will we be missing a lot of important cases?
No, I don't. I really do not think that Story County has a lot of cases, and certainly in our department we do check routinely, and I cannot think of the cases that have been like tens or 11s, and I've repeated them. They've always come down. I have had a couple of cases where there was a family in Boone County who actually had a very high level, and those came down on their own once they did lead abatement at the home that the family lived in. But we've seen, my own personal experience and with my partners has not been that it's been a real big issue in Story County, and that's kind of the point, is it's not a big issue here, but still we will occasionally get a case. And it's going to be something that will eventually, over years and years and years, go away, because they're not producing lead paint anymore. They're not producing lead and gasoline anymore. So you basically just have to find the places where the kids are and make sure that they're painted well and there's lead abatement, and then it's gone. It's not like something that will rear its ugly head again because it's not being produced anymore. So it's really a tough issue. I understand your concern. I kind of like the idea that they said that they could negotiate what you do. Those letters, I think, that you send out routinely are, they send out these letters to the parents, and they say that it's time for your child to get your lead checked, and the parents have brought in these letters, and it's like, well, yeah, we've already checked them. We've already checked them twice, you know, and they're fine and stuff. Yeah, yeah. And,
so if
and
we could drop that, even that would be huge.
That would be. I don't think that gives me much benefit, but I don't know about other practitioners. I mean, we see the greatest majority of kids, but I don't know whether the family practice department uses that as a hint. It doesn't make sense that it would, you know, because they have to have one lead level before they go to kindergarten at the very least, and so that's kind of a safety net. But you'd like to catch it earlier. That's why we do it at a year. You know, I think the state was.
They are.
I think the state was.
Boone gave those up.
Yeah, because I kind of, yeah, interesting. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, they did, they were. Because I remember having several discussions with them about what to do. I kind of wanted to say, oh my gosh, do we have to chelate? And they brought like experts in. No, no. Hold off. Lead abatement, watch, good nutrition. So.
And the other issue is the computer program is so archaic that, and, you know, and it's not value added for the citizens in the county as far as, you know, if, like Dr. Passion was saying, you know, occasionally we do have a high lead level. I mean, it's hours. And hours.
It really is. It's crazy.
On just because the system is so old.
You know, but July 1st, we'll get the new one.
Well, that's going to be my next question. Do you still want to recommend that we don't continue this? You want to give it a year and see what happens?
I think we're open. We're open to whatever your pleasure is.
And the other question I would have, and because we contract with Homeward, and if your expenses aren't being covered by the grant, they're coming out of somewhere else, because we pay you a flat...
Coming in on Mary Greeley, right?
Right. We pay you, the county pays you a flat fee or a flat amount of money every year for your services. So if you're not getting reimbursed properly, or it's costing Mary Greeley money, then that's going to come back to the county and say, okay, you know, the Board of Health decided they wanted to keep this lead contract, but we're about $7,000 short because of our clerical expenses. Now the contract is going to have to change.
Yeah, and I think that would be reasonable that we factor in how much we can afford, and let's say it comes back to be about $10,000, then I'll factor out how much we can afford, and that's what we'll negotiate into the contract.
take away what you do, like, daily, like those letters.
Yeah, that would
and
be...
And just focus on a case-by-case need.
And that's what I was going to add. There might be 4 parents a year, you know, occasionally we'll get a physician calling to say, you know, I've had a baby that had a screening that was 10, you know.
Right, yep.
And so will you please call the parents and do some education, and, you know, every time we've done that, the levels go down. So we've never had education done where the levels continue to go up.
Well, that's
So the education is what I'm concerned about.
Well, and then there's no expectation that simply because you're not managing that program that those phone calls are going to stop. You're still going to get those phone calls, and yeah, and you're not going to say, no, you need to call the Department of Public Health. So.
Okay, we'll go forward another year. We'll negotiate the contract.
And drop those things that you don't think are really necessary and maybe just do a case-by-case report.
Now, negotiate and put it in the firm that they've got to come up with that new computer program.
Yeah.
There's no use spinning your wheels on their
right. Yeah, and the other part of that is...
Well, if you don't have it, you'll send them the data and let them enter it.
The other part is, Margaret, you need to be recertified.
Recertified. I'm going to pay for that. I know it's not coming in my...
How much is it? What's it?
Gary Greeley?
500?
I mean, that we would end up having Gary Greeley pay for it, but I don't know if that's right.
Yeah.
500? 500? Can't that 500 come out of that budget?
Well, I guess they're already in. Are you already in the hole?
Well, we may have a. By the end of the year, we will be in the hole. Without this.
I thought you were going to drop some stuff.
But we've already.
Well, we're tied into this.
We're already tied into
okay.
July 1st. I mean, we can go. We don't have the money for everything this year. But period. So.
Right. No, and you're going to end up with a budget amendment anyway because of your temporary help.
You know, I guess, you know, what we can do is just go ahead and do it as we've always done. How often do you get that? Once a year?
No, 3 years.
Every 3 years? You know, we can do it as normal and see if we can... cut out something.
But don't, well, yeah, I mean, it's $500. It's not going to break anybody.
It's not going to break anybody.
If it won't work on your side, then let us know. And
you know, the other thing,
you need it if we're going to. Yeah.
You know, the other thing too is if you read the medical literature, there's really more concerns about those mild lead levels between 5 and 10. And actually, I was reading an article that said that it's actually more concerning if a lead level goes from 3 to 5 than remains a 7. You know, so, I mean, a good lead level and stuff. And we've changed our machine analysis, I think, recently in our lab, so we're getting a lot more zeros. We used to never get a zero. We always got 1 or 2. But now we're getting a lot more zeros. And so our ability to evaluate it is better. But if we're really watching it as providers of children, we need to kind of keep an eye on those kids who are like 5. I mean, most of us are starting to repeat levels that are 5. Just make sure it's not continuing to climb.
She started showing that as part of her program. So.
All right, well, this is a consideration item, so we need some sort of a motion from the board to move forward.
What about a motion that Homeward looks into things that they can cut on costs of the lead program and consider, and then maybe go for it for another year if it is fiscally responsible.
Continuation of the lead grant.
With cutting some things. Does that sound okay?
And we need a second to that. We've got a motion, a second. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, the same sign. Okay. Now, we're going to move to, it'll actually be under, still under number 7, but it's item 8, discussion, no. Yeah, 8, discussion and consideration of local public health services application.
Thank you. What I had Terry just pass out was a copy of last year's application. The state is behind this year, and we typically have our application by now. It'll be due probably the 1st of March, sometime in there. So when I get the application, instead of having to pull another Board of Health meeting together, I was going to walk you through what we will be asking for in that next application. And I've been told that if I walk through that with you now and you approve, or then that'll be good and we won't have to have a special board meeting.
Okay.
So it's basically the same as the application will look at. The things I'm going to ask you about will be the exact same thing as what's on here. So a project director, I'm recommending that I continue to be the project director, or you could have Terry be the project. No, okay. Anyway, the authorized agent is Homeward. And if you go to the second page, I think I've made a mark on your forms there, but I'm indicating that we would like to continue through this local public health service application, meaning the monies will go to disease outbreak investigation. It would go towards our Home Care Aid Homemaker program. It would go to the Home Care Aid Personal Care program. It would go to nursing skilled and nursing health promotion. Those are the exact items that we today are managing through the grant. The one thing I wanted to point out is that on the health promotion fee, currently we our reimbursement rate is $127.65. Due to our cost report through Medicare, we'd like to raise that to $176.93, and that's what we would bill the grant. That's the only fee change. If you go then to the last page, and actually the things that I've just gone through are really the important things for you to approve. But I'm anticipating that Section 6 will give us, that we'll have something just like that in the new application. And if we do, which I believe we will, we would like to continue monitoring these essential public health services that are documented there. And that would be the health status facing the community, giving people information about healthy choices. We'd be monitoring that, evaluating and improving programs and interventions, and continuing to and applying the evidence base of public health. And if on Section 9, if these outcome measures, they will probably be there. They've been there every year for a while. We would continue to report the CHF, congestive heart failure, those served who reported having congestive heart failure, and just managing the outcomes of that.
So you only get to choose one?
Yes.
I do immunizations, but that's me.
You just need this board to approve this application.
Yes, and probably the biggest thing that I need your approval on is on the first two pages, nor the last page. No, I'm kidding. We will take that into consideration.
Oh,
it's a
okay.
Very good idea.
I understand. That's okay.
Actually, we chose that because it was easy to monitor. Easy to monitor. To be honest.
Hey, that's understandable.
Okay, if there's no other questions, we need a motion to approve the...
I'll move to the exception.
I'd like to second.
Motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Okay,
thank you very much.
Thank you. Now get home before the weather turns bad. So there's no windows. All right. The next thing is the update on the e-cigarette ordinance. 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, we passed the e-cigarette ordinance. The Board of Supervisors did on the first reading. And then the three of us collectively received a lot of correspondence about that ordinance. And I don't have a copy of it in front of me, but I think what the concern or the question was is the way it was worded. And the wording stated that the products could not be in view or be accessible by the public. So in other words, when you go into a gas station and you want to buy a pack of cigarettes, you have to tell the clerk, I need a pack of Marlboros. You can't just walk to a shelf, pull off a pack, and then take them up and pay for it.
Right, but you can see them.
You can see them.
It's like cigarettes.
And that's where I think the problem came. And we heard from retailers, we heard from Hy-Vee, heard from a lot of people that said, you know, that they disagreed with that part. And I think the sentiment, at least for me, I can tell you that I want to see them treated just like cigarettes.
Right.
I agree. Differently than
cigarettes. Yeah, yeah. I agree. Yeah.
And I think that was the intent of the ordinance, and then it got fine-tuned a little bit more before it actually came in front of us. So what the Board of Supervisors did is upon the advice of the county attorney, before the second reading, is that we said we were going to postpone it. We would like to have the opportunity, similar to what they did with the keg ordinance, they had at least two public input meetings. So we've committed to do that. I would assume one will be here, and one will, if the city of Ames would allow us to use the council chambers, we'll have a public input session sometime in the evening to get input from people that have questions or concerns about it. And then proceed from there with the final two readings of the ordinance. And there's also two bills. One was proposed by Senator Kornbach, and then there's one that's about, I think, 10 or 12 House members have signed on to. They're similar, but they're not exactly the same. So there are two bills in the legislature this session that basically would deal with the same thing. So we're just, you know, we're not going to, at least for me, I'm not going to base what I do on what I think the legislature will or won't do. If we pass this ordinance and the state passes a similar bill, as long as ours isn't any more restrictive than ours, basically would go away like the keg ordinance did, and the state law would take over from there. So how'd I do? So it's not that the board philosophically disagreed with the ordinance. It was the language and how it was written and how it was interpreted. So we're going to get that figured out, and then we'll have our public input meetings and go from there.
Okay.
So
I would agree with the way you're working on it. I think it really should be treated like cigarettes. You know, on kind of a different subject, there's been some talk about banning them from restaurants and eating places like cigarettes are now. And what? Go ahead.
From public places.
Like cigarettes.
Will that be part of our bill?
No.
No. Why don't we want to put that in there?
Well, yeah.
And I think part of it is the enforcement piece of it. And that's, I know Margaret had a couple of questions, the way the ordinance is written, and it says a public health official can act on a complaint or law enforcement. So
I could see some kid buying an e-cigarette. And
you get the call, and then you have to go down and make the arrest.
Oh, cool. But I need a little card that says Board House.
We'll get you
Excuse
one.
Excuse me. Board House. So, hey, I've always wanted to do that. Board House.
Yeah.
Okay, so put your hands up right on the counter.
That's where the ordinance stands.
That's right. No, before.
Magnum.
So that's I agree. That sounds good.
Okay. So that's kind of where we're at from there.
Is it true? I've heard that they're tainting these e-cigarettes now with marijuana in them.
Marijuana stuff, Mark.
Yeah, and you don't, and you can't, because it's in there and it comes out of vapor, the people around you don't really smell it like if it was marijuana. So they're getting by. They're getting by. I think this come out of Colorado that I heard that they're doing this. Yeah.
Like the cigarette companies were.
Okay. Right.
None of them would be what?
Yeah.
Oh, we gotta tax them.
It's like cigarettes.
We tax cigarettes. I think they should be treated like cigarettes. End of story.
Yeah, I agree. No restaurants.
Well, I don't know about that. I'm always kind of... I'm not convinced about the secondhand issue, okay? But I think, and I have to think about it a little bit. I have to get me an e-cigarette.
We'll get one from the regulated. Okay, discussion salary increase for Kathy Baslewski.
At that time. So what ended up happening is the Board of Supervisors meeting, the discussion came up when we were discussing budget, and I think it was Paul thought that we were talking about something different and not the 3% increase that Margaret had proposed in her budget. So I do have handouts on that, and I don't know if you all remember from last time what we discussed. About that.
I'll give you my recollection. I don't know who was here last time. We did. My recollection, we had a discussion on the 3% increase. And my recollection was the discussion was about how Margaret's employees had been treated in the past as far as increases would be the annual increase that we typically get July 1st. And I don't remember, and I'm almost sure that I would, that we would have approved an increase, a 3% increase for either Matt or Kathy outside of what the rest of the county employees are going to receive. And I know that the money or the dollar figures that were included in your budget handout were, I guess I look at them as more or less placeholders. That we hadn't decided on what the increase was going to be for other county employees. Therefore, the 3% was a representative number of how that would affect your budget. But
my intention, and maybe it was not clear, in the past, I have never been no one is allowed to recommend a cost of living. So that 3% that I proposed in the budget was truly based on merit and not on cost of living. There is no way I would have put cost of living in that write-up because we're not allowed to do that.
Right.
And I think, you know, we were talking about the changing grade, and we went from a 9 to a 10. And when that occurred, because Matt was below the minimum, he got an increase in pay. Because I was already in the pay range, I did not. And if you look at what I handed out, the minimum, it took me 6 years to get to that point for what is now my minimum in that grade. And it took about half that time for Matt to get to that. So what I just did was summarize my background and that sheet of paper, summarized where my salary has gone in the 9 years that I've been here. And I guess it is up to the board to make a decision on whether, as Margaret proposes, that I get that merit increase.
Well, And I do recall speaking to this when this discussion came up in December, that the county does not have a mechanism, and you're not in any different boat than any other county employees in.
Well,
as far as
in a sense, that, well, true.
The county does not have a mechanism at this point for merit increases. Now that's part of the reason that we did the compensation study, and the Board of Supervisors voted to approve that study. The overall goal is for us to get to a point where we can.
Exactly. Well, whatever you want to call it, I mean, we don't have to call it merit, but
it is a merit, because that's what you're asking this board to give you is a 3% merit increase.
But there have been other county employees this year and in the past that have gotten 3%, whatever they call it. I mean, it's been called other things, and in the past history of the Board of Health, they have allowed salary increases with increased job responsibilities and duties. My question would be, what message is being sent to me if I have been a dependable, reliable, experienced professional employee for the Board of Health, have gone ahead and increased my responsibilities, gotten further certifications, to what end?
Isn't that what we did when we increased our level?
We voted in to the change in the job description.
Right.
With that change in the job description, it moved them from a 9 to a 10.
Right.
Matt's salary was below the minimum for a grade 10. So his salary was right. He was below what the minimum level was for grade 10. Kathy's salary was within that range. And when the county did this when we implemented this salary survey, is that if you were below the range, if you're below the minimum, if your grade changed and you were below the minimum, you saw that increase. However, if your grade changed and you were still within that pay range, there was no increase.
And every level has a pay range, right?
Right.
And there's overlap in a lot of them.
And the county does have a policy in place where if you go from one grade to the next, you can be adjusted up within that new grade. They do allow that in the policy that's written.
And I'll just, as a point of reminder, this board did, at our last meeting, vote to accept the county's employee policy manual, the compensation schedule, and the job descriptions for the environmental health specialist and the director for the environmental health program. So,
and you also voted to accept the budget as proposed, which was what she had included on.
Well, and I think that's where we're maybe there's some difference in how we voted to accept that. I remember having a discussion that the 3% was simply a placeholder. And if anybody voted to approve that budget, and that's the other part of this equation, is that this board can vote to approve the budget. It's ultimately up to the Board of Supervisors to vote how much of that budget to fund. And the Board of Supervisors would not have approved a 3% increase in a particular employee's salary because their department had recommended it. Matter of fact, we did have a department head, elected official, recommend a 3% increase for one of her employees, and we told her that this was the budget work session was not the appropriate time to bring that forward.
But is it my understanding also that when money is given to the Board of Health, they can choose, the Board of Health can, as they have in the past, make a decision on salaries and increases?
Well, to a certain extent, that's true.
And then my other question would be, for the other board members that were here last month, was it the same interpretation when we discussed salaries? Were you under the impression that everybody was getting an increase because the grade changed?
That's what I thought.
I thought so too. And one of the things we did talk about, salary discussions, that we basically gave it up to the Board of Supervisors, and that we made the final approval for the budget. But as the older board members knew, we never really got into like salary discussions.
We used to.
Oh, we did?
Yeah.
I thought we didn't.
Long time.
Yeah.
Long
time.
So that's kind of what I thought, that with the increase in pay grade and also with the change in your description, that was a
big. And that's the impression I was left with when we left the last meeting. So, and I did re-listen to the minutes, and I don't recall hearing about the placeholder with the money.
Kathy, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, this board has adopted the county's policies as far as employees, the handbook, and the pay scale, and I can't sit here and in good conscience support any type of action that's going to treat you or Matt or Margaret any different than any other county employee. You're like a conservation employee. Your conservation employees they're actually employees of the conservation board. But that board reverts back to the county when they go for their employees go for their.
So employees. If the Board of Health chose not to adopt those policies as we did last time, then they could go forward and do it differently.
If they chose to do so. But.
So, was it in the best interest of the health department to go in that direction then?
I think it was, or I wouldn't have suggested it. It makes things a lot easier. Because if you don't have that, and maybe Dr. Pooley can talk to this, he was the chair of this Board of Health long before I was ever, or Gene Halliburton was ever around, and as a representative of the Board of Supervisors, I think that's the reason that they put that position in there, is because somebody from the board is here on a day-to-day basis and deals with the personnel items.
Well then, going back to the county compensation policies, there is, which I have a copy of here that I can give out, there is an option where if an employee's current actual pay is at or above the minimum rate of the new pay grade, the employee's actual pay may be adjusted up to the midpoint progression between the old and new grade. So there is an avenue to still do it, even if the Board of Health does adopt, as they have,
right,
the county. So I guess I'm asking the board if they would consider this option then. And adjust it up under this, which is the county policy. It's on the piece of paper there. It was below the mid range. Well, it was a little bit above the mid range of the old grade. So mid range of the old grade was 42.3, and my salary was 44.5. In the new grade range, the minimum is 43.2, and my salary is 44.5.
What you're saying is that with your years of experience and how long you've been here, and then all these new requirements, you should be closer to that mid-range.
Ideally. I mean, I'm not, you know, I understand the county has constraints. But given that it took me 6 years, when you look at the grade range now, it took me 6 years to get to the minimum on my current grade range.
And I'll just say again, Kathy, you're in no different boat than any other county employee is. If you'd have gone to work in the treasurer's office or the auditor's office, you'd be.
Yeah, but it's different job descriptions, different training that's involved.
Absolutely, but that's part of your job requirements. And I think any discussion about your increase probably needs to come from the director, and the first place that conversation needs to start with is with the human resource director. And I think that's part of the reason that this board, and if you want to say that I urge this board to adopt those, I mean, it makes things a lot easier.
No, I don't have an issue with that, but there is an avenue available now to increase my salary. And at a minimum, one would hope that it would at least be increased the amount that Matt got.
Well, if this board acts on that, then this board may as well go back and rescind the resolutions that we approved last time, adopting those, the handbook and the pay scale and the job descriptions. And part of the reason we did that is to put a mechanism in place so if there was consideration for a pay increase, then it could be handled like any other request would be from any other department head.
Well, then I'm a little confused on the avenue that I should be taking because I'm following what I was told to
do. Typically what would happen was that the director of your department would go to the human resource director.
Well, were you aware of that?
And she's gone on maternity leave. It'll be back next month. That's what I'm going to suggest, is that you have a conversation with Alyssa when she gets back about this and see what happens.
So you're saying the director of human resources as opposed to...
Oh, but Margaret... Right. If the treasurer wants to increase the salary for one of her employees,
right,
the first thing she would do is go speak with the human resource director and talk to the human resource director about it.
That's an elected official. Is it the same for...
But anyway, so go on. Yeah.
And that's how the process would typically start, was with the director having a conversation with the elected official.
Okay.
Or excuse me, the human resource director.
Right. So the human resource director comes back to them and says, according to our handbook or the pay grade or their job description, that they're just right, or, oh, no, maybe they should go up.
Right.
And then the director would then come back to us and say, this is your recommendation for the human resources.
Right.
So, and if the director disagreed with that on the human resources, then what is there?
Well, I think it's different because this board is its own board. If this
right.
board
yeah.
would disagree with the recommendation from the human resource director, it could vote to give the increase. The question comes is, the Board of Supervisors funds this department.
And then it would go to the Board of Supervisors, and the Board of Supervisors would say, okay, I agree with your disagreement with the... But also, the director could go to... And I'm just trying to understand this.
Right.
Because it's very confusing to me, too. So if the director goes to the human resources, and they say, yeah, I think that would work, it still has to go through the Board of Supervisors, right?
Right. Well, no, the actual increase would not.
Okay. If human resources said it was okay.
Right.
If they agreed with it.
Right. It's really not any, because even though you adopt the handbook and the pay grade policy, there is no set policy on a merit increase.
Well, there's no policy on merit increases because we don't give merit increases. Right. I think there's what the human resources director typically likes to use is there has to be a measurable, a substantial change in the job duties and the type of work. If you're operating completely out of your job description, or if you've taken on additional duties, then there can be an increase. The argument can be made for an increase.
Have the right.
Well, I can't measure that. I can't measure the increase in what your daily workload is now as compared to when it was when you started.
So, but Margaret can, and she's the one that proposed this.
So it sounds to me like what we need to do is we need to, because this seems like we're discussing this an awful lot, okay? So it sounds like what we need to do is we need to have the director
right.
figure out what the director feels is a fair wage. Oh, go ahead.
I did propose 3% at the last budget. That's what I feel is fair, 3% increase on what she's at now. And I feel like Alyssa, the HR director, is pretty much informed of this. I think Paul has been talking to her, so I think that
we've never spoken about a 3% increase for your employees. Right.
He actually took the right steps before you guys got the resolution. He has no direction on how to do anything.
I don't know what else to say. I really don't.
It's just very frustrating as an employee when you do your job and you do it well.
Sat here and said that you haven't done your job well.
No, I'm not saying that you do. I'm just saying I'm very frustrated.
I'm going to remind you that you're not dissimilar to 300 other county employees. Is that something that this board, the Board of Supervisors, would like to change and implement a merit increase system? It certainly is, and that's what we're trying to get to. But, if every director goes to the HR director, or every elected official goes to the HR director and says, well, I've got an employee that's been here for 10 years, she does a really nice job, I would like to give her a 3% pay increase. But
getting back to the policies, there is still that avenue of doing this. And that's in place right now.
So, I guess,
from a director's perspective, it is very important to keep your employees happy so that they stay, because a lot of money and a lot of time goes into developing rapport, training, etc. And because we have not had a merit system for as long as I've been here, that's the only way for us to get raises for the employees is for the director to come forward and request it. And for you suggesting that, you know, the directors really, you know, if everybody came up and asked, whatever it would be, we're suggesting we be.
We've had that request. We've had the request specifically, I would like all my employees to get a raise because I don't think they're making enough money. We've had that request before. And you can term the 2% pay increase that you've gotten the last 2 years. You can term that any way you want. If you look at strictly the cost of living increase, the cost of living hasn't been 2%. So you can take the percent and a half or the percent and a quarter of the cost of living increase is, and you can say that you're getting a 3/4% merit increase. But it's not that increases haven't been given. Every county employee over the last 3 years has gotten a 2% pay increase. And there is no mechanism in place for a merit increase. Margaret, I would encourage you to sit down when Alyssa gets back, make the case that Kathy is entitled to a 3% pay increase, and we'll go from there. But I don't know how else to do it.
Margaret, what is the funding? What is your budget cycle? Like, when do you have a new budget coming up? That's in July. And salaries are part of your budget, right?
Okay. Except when we propose it, they tell us to leave all those blank. And then the only reason I fill them in is for the benefit of the Board of Health, so they know generally where we're at. But then when I turn the budget in to the Board of Supervisors, I leave all them blank because I just find instructions. And then they fill it in.
And that was my interpretation of what had happened when you presented the budget to us, was that the 3% was in there as a placeholder, so this board knew overall what the total budget would be for the health department.
But if you read it, 3% for me, 3% for Kathy, and then the 200-something for Matt, because that was in alignment with what I was recommending. So it wasn't across the board. And if it was just across the board, that Kristen would have been in that list also, because she's half employed by us.
Okay. That's my suggestion, Margaret. And if the rest of the board thinks I'm all wet, then now's the time for them to let me know. But if we don't have some mechanism in place to do this, then
then I don't know how this is going to work, because this board can make all the recommendations it wants, but ultimately the Board of Supervisors is the one that funds it.
From this board to go to ELISA. I'm sorry.
I am fine with you going to them. I mean, that sounds like that's the mechanism of...
And that's why we tell you to do that, because I don't know what responsibilities or job duties that Kathy's taken over since she's been here. That's why if you go to the director and explain that to the director, the HR director, you're in essence making the case for Kathy to get the increase.
Do I, you know what, does the board agree? Could the board write a letter?
I can't write that letter because I don't know what's changed. And I don't think anybody else up here knows what
we're trying to do from her letter here.
But we don't say what it's proposing. I guess what I would like to personally see is I would like to see you come to us and specifically say that I want this person to make this much money and this person to make this much money, and this is what I feel my salary should be. And then we can, you know, and then we can talk about it, and if we approve it, it's almost like approving the budget, right? And
right.
Then it goes to the Board of Supervisors, and they say, yeah, that sounds reasonable. Or it's like, I'm sorry, you guys can say all you want, but we think that this is what they should get. Right?
Right.
Am I understanding this correctly?
As far as I know. This is all new to me.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the Conservation Board does with their employees. I don't know what Emergency Management does with their employees. The assessors, not unlike the assessor, the county assessor.
Right.
I mean, he's his own taxing authority. He can set his salary wherever he wants it. But his conference board is who he answers to. They ultimately have to approve the budget. And if he says, I think all my employees need a 4% increase, and the conference board turns around and says, no, we think they only need a 2% increase, so they're more in line with the rest of the county employees.
And also considering our budgetary strength.
Right.
Right.
So, and the other piece of that puzzle is that the county has to certify their budget on, well, it will be on March 11th is the budget hearing. So, any increase that is going to be recommended to this board is going to come out of, more than likely come out of what you've already submitted to us. Because our HR director is not going to be back here until the first week of March. Okay, but that's not what was funded. The final numbers weren't for 3% because they weren't on there.
But you said you had 3% in there for
that
your budget.
It was on there, yeah.
It was on the one that went to the Board of Supervisors?
It
was, yeah.
This is the one time I didn't leave it off because it was the only time I had the nerve to change it. So it was proposed, yeah, yep.
I would assume it'll all depend on how it works out with what you've got number wise. Because once that budget's certified, we can't increase it. It cannot be increased, it can only be decreased. And if the HR director recommends that this board approve that salary increase, it'll come out of what your FY 14-15 budget is. So.
I was under the impression that she was getting that 3% when we...
Well, then...
What was the...
communication.
Grade changes. I'm still struggling because to me, if one is getting a raise and one is not, I understand he's minimum, but what if they had both been within the mid-9, grade 9, and we bump it up to grade 10? I mean, explain, what is that? Advantage, disadvantage, whatever. What's the
job description was changed, and I think it was just it was the technical aspect. Right, it went from technical to professional, and that bumped it from a 9 to a 10. And where Matt's salary was on the grade 9 scale was below what the minimum was on the grade 10. And Kathy's grade 9 was within the range.
Mid-9, below 10.
Right.
And I think what maybe you're questioning too is when the county redid all the jobs, there was a lot of people that grades got changed, and if they were moved to another grade, they gave them the minimum. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm just trying to follow. I mean, I understand. I know we're not.
So it was in the whole big picture.
And stuff. I'm just trying to follow.
That was their policy to do that.
What is your proposed salary? For her. What was your proposed salary for her? Yeah.
It was like another $1,300 added to that.
I didn't bring my budget with me.
By $4,600, right?
Correct.
Still below the mid.
Still below the mid, yeah.
But that's what Margaret recommended in the budget. Right?
Yeah, which isn't a whole lot. No, I didn't think it was all extra.
Well, I'm just going to caution this board that there has to be some mechanism in place for increases to be funded. I mean, we can sit here and say that every one of them needs to make $100,000 a year.
Right.
You can send that recommendation to the Board of Supervisors. I know you're not saying that.
But
that's it. This board can make recommendations. This board can approve a budget that you submit. But the fact of the matter is that the Board of Supervisors funds the Environmental Health Department, and that board makes the final decision on what that funding is. So.
But Paul, we approve Margaret's budget, right?
Right.
We approve the recommendation for Margaret's budget.
Right.
Got it. And we've approved this budget, right? The budget that she has in front of the board now?
Right.
Okay. So, de facto, we as a Board of Health has already said that we support that budget, correct?
Right.
Okay. So now it's really up to the Board of Supervisors.
And and that process is over. But I will go back and say that the 3% that Margaret showed for salary increases
mm-hmm.
is not normally in your budget. Matter of fact, when any department or any elected official submits their budget to the board, salaries are not included.
Right.
We don't typically decide what we're going to do for any type of a salary increase across the board until the budget hearing when we certify the budget. So when Margaret had that 3% increase in there, it was my understanding that 3% was for a placeholder, which would give this board a better picture of what the total budget would be if a 3% increase was granted.
Okay.
So, and I don't remember, I'll have to go look, but if your budget that you submitted to the Board of Supervisors had the 3% increase in there, we didn't even discuss wages when you were up here for your budget session.
Well, we started to discuss, and then it came up about what you were talking about, and that's why I asked to go back on to clarify.
So we can support or approve anything we want, but the final decision is up to the Board of Supervisors.
Well, the funding, right.
Right, of course.
The funding authority is with the Board of Supervisors.
Right. That increase, that was $1,400.
$1,214,
yeah. So that's for the year.
Correct.
So that's just a little over $100 a month.
Correct.
You can't take reduced spending by $6 million over a 4-year period by not looking at every $100. And that's exactly what the Board of Supervisors has done over the past.
I understand,
period.
But
and I'm gonna remind you guys whose money you're spending. It's every single taxpayer in Story County. So I don't want this to reflect in any way that I don't think that Margaret's employees are worthy of increases. It's simply a matter that if we start treating different employees differently, it's going to cause a headache for everybody.
I just want to say one more thing on this is that our department, because there's so many different facets to our department, it requires a lot of training. And if we're talking about the bottom line is to keep our people because I don't want to train people over and over again. So financially, it makes sense to throw $1,300 at, as a merit
and keep her.
But the county doesn't have that mechanism in place.
I disagree, but...
And that's your right. So I guess the direction that I would give is for you to have a conversation with Alyssa when she gets back. And I think the reality is that any increase that's approved by this board is going to have to come out of the budget that was agreed upon in your budget session. So if there's a $1,300 pay increase, that's going to have to come out of your budget for next year.
Starting in July.
Right, July 1st. Anything else? All right, the next item, the watershed grant. Discussion of Hickory Grove watershed permit fees.
Oh, okay. This is quick. What I want to do, you know, to get grants, you kind of have to show that you're throwing some money at it. So for those 9 houses, I'm asking the board to give me permission to waive the permit fee, and that is $240 per permit.
And these are the houses in the Hickory Grove watershed that
correct.
We don't think have a system.
Correct. Yeah. Yep.
So moved. You need a second on that? Or?
Yeah.
Yep, need a second. A motion and a second. Any further discussion?
No.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So there's your fee waiver. Department, review of current Environmental Health Department fees.
I am not proposing any changes at this time unless you were suggesting. But I propose that we keep them the same as last year.
Right, and she did. There is one of these attached to our agenda for the fee table. There's an update regarding the uniforms and taxability policy. And I don't know, are you going to go over that? Or you want me to? Basically, what it amounts to is that there's an IRS rule that if the county purchases clothing, then
purchase what?
Clothing. So we buy you guys what? Boots, I think, is what? Margaret, we buy you guys your boots? Is that all we buy for you guys?
Yeah.
Okay.
We go on this market. I put in a little bit more for shirts with the emblem because going to the pool, we really
right.
have some identification.
Okay. So what happens is that the IRS says if we're providing those, buying those clothes or reimbursing for those clothes, they need to be taxed. So when you go out to buy your clothes, and I don't, there's some of the clothes that are covered and some of them aren't. I think if you buy a shirt that's got a permanently attached patch or an emblem, you're okay. And then I think your work boots are not.
I don't know.
Some things are taxable in some way.
Right. Currently, our road department, our guys that work for the secondary road department, they'll go out and buy their own work clothes. There's certain things that they, I mean, there's guidelines they have to follow, but they'll go out and purchase their own items. And the road department budgets for X amount of dollars per employee per year. So they'll go out and buy a couple of worksheets or shirts, 2 pair of jeans, and a pair of boots. They'll turn in their claim, and they'll get reimbursed for it. Well, the IRS says that you should take taxes out of that reimbursement because the boots can be worn other than when you're at work. Or, I mean, it may sound silly, but that's the IRS regulation.
Yeah, I know. But yeah.
Or it's the same if the shirt doesn't have a patch that's permanently attached to it, or a pair of jeans. I mean, if you go out and buy 3 pair of blue, and there's really, I mean, they're just basically blue jeans is what they're buying. If they're being reimbursed for those, and they need to be taxed because they can wear those jeans other than when they're working.
So they'll pay tax when they purchase it, and they just don't get reimbursed the tax amount.
Exactly.
Basically what it is. And we can't change this. We can't change it anyway.
Right.
It's IRS.
Right, it's IRS well, policy.
There's really nothing we can do.
Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. We can't do anything.
It's not for us to approve. It's just simply.
No, I understand.
Okay.
Now that everybody.
Everybody taxes.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is.
And the last thing is the personnel action process. When there's a personnel action, like the green form, we call it the green form. It's a form that the department director fills out. If somebody is given a raise, if somebody is terminated, typically those forms go in front of the Board of Supervisors for approval. And as soon as we figure out the right mechanism, they'll come in front of this board for approval because Margaret and her employees are employees of the Board of Health, not the Board of Supervisors. So those, yeah, it's just a change in the way we do things. The conservation does the same thing. The conservation board approves those actions. And but really the only thing that would be for any increase in salary, because you get a merit, in, or not a merit, a longevity increase is on there every year. So it's not something that we're going to see a lot of. Okay.
That comes before us.
It will in the future. It hasn't been in the past. It will in the future.
Okay.
All right. Staff comments? Board comments?
I have a comment.
Okay.
My comment is that I think the salary thing and how this works, really, we need to really think a little bit differently about how we handle this. As a Board of Health. And I would propose just to at least begin the conversation is that with our next budget that Margaret talks to us about, that we talk about the salaries and that we expect her as the director to have done due diligence with the resource person. And then we would make a vote with an approval or disapproval of those salaries. And so when it goes to the Board of Supervisors, they can already say, the Board of Health has approved this, including these type of salaries. And then that way, and to be quite honest, I think that's the only thing we can do.
Right.
As you keep bringing up, is the Board of Supervisors can, once we make the final decision. But if this is up in front, actual give us salaries, this is what we want, this is what the raise is, and then we make that, and then Margaret's job will be, and I've looked at this, and they're only really approved for a 2%, but I think it should be an extra 1%. We can discuss it in a public forum, and then say, we approve this, and we agree with this, or we don't.
Right.
And then that goes to the Board of Supervisors, and then then it's kind of out of our hands. But okay, well, maybe because this is the most conversations I've ever had with salaries since I've been here.
Well, and I agree.
It used to be,
yeah, and I agree with that because they're employees of the Board of Health,
right,
like Paul said. And if we don't do that, we're not doing our job.
So we need to more active.
We need
role.
To be interactive in that.
Right.
And
clear.
And yeah, and suggest those raises or not raises or whatever it is, and then it goes to the Board of Supervisors, and then it's on their plate.
Got it.
At least
and
we've done what we're
due diligence.
Yep.
And go with Margaret's suggestions. I mean, and Margaret will have to come to us, or the director will have to come to us and say, "This is what we. This is why." Okay.
I agree.
Right.
I agree with that completely.
Okay.
It makes perfect sense. It's just. It's something I don't know that has been done in the recent past, and this board just got away from doing it. And
so maybe we need to start doing it again.
But we always did it before. I remember we did it every year. We went.
Yeah. Okay. Look, we need to start doing it again.
All right.
Maybe it's been too long. We haven't been done it for so long, and then this thing just spilled up. And
well, we haven't done it since. Yeah, we haven't done it since Margaret came on board. Actually.
There you go. That's right.
We did it all the way up till.
So it's Margaret's fault. We haven't noticed that she came on board. Okay.
All right.
If there's nothing else, I'll call for a motion for adjournment. Okay. You got a motion?
Second.
Motion second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned.